Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Your Personal Finance with Dr. Charles Ross. Welcome, everybody. A lot of people always ask me, why do I have entrepreneurs on? And one of the reasons I have entrepreneurs on is because I like to highlight folks that have a main hustle and a side hustle. And I've done that in the past on numerous shows, and this show is not going to be any exception to that. My guest today is Dorian Swinton. He's an educator, musical artist, and we'll talk about why he calls himself a musical artist versus a singer. He's also an entrepreneur. I'll bet he's also a serial entrepreneur. He's born in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. His love for music, writing, and helping others started at an early age. Graduated from Florida A&M University. Two of my daughters graduated from that great university with a bachelor's degree in English and at Grand Canyon University with a master's in educational administration. He's worked for 11 years at AM Kids in Tallahassee, a school for students in the Florida juvenile justice system. That's interesting, where he taught English and reading for 6 years before being promoted to director of education for 5 years. He then relocated to the great city of Atlanta in 2015 to his advances of career in education. And now he works as an instructional coach at Price Middle School. And also another reason he came to this great city was to pursue his musical talents as an artist under his performance stage name, D. Swint. So please welcome Dorian Swinton to Your Personal Finance. Good afternoon. How's it going, sir?
Good afternoon. I'm great. How are you, sir?
I'm doing mighty, mighty, mighty fine. So we were talking offline. So share with the audience why you consider yourself a musical artist versus a singer.
Well, you know, when I hear the term singer, I think about somebody who they kind of specialize just in that, more so, you know, singing or performing. A musical artist, from my perspective, is kind of it's multiple components with that. So you know, I'm a singer, but I'm also a songwriter. I'm an arranger. I've put on numerous musical events, like in Florida, and then even a couple since I've been here in Georgia. So just a musical artist kind of just encompasses a lot of different aspects of music, or just of the career itself, versus a singer, where, you know, their main focus is just being the artist in the forefront. But I do a lot of stuff in the forefront as well as behind the scenes. So
okay,
that's why I consider myself more of a musical artist.
So do you consider yourself as a producer? Do you produce music as well? Not necessarily,
I guess
your own music?
So probably on the vocally, I would say. So I don't really produce like music itself as far as tracks, but vocally I produce vocals, I arrange vocals, love to go and just do studio work, background work, you know. So yeah, I am a vocal producer as well.
Okay, awesome. Do you play any instruments?
So I play piano and I play drums. I used to be in band growing up,
okay.
And I used to take piano lessons when I was a child, but I more so play by ear. But I did have some lessons growing up. I just never really stuck with it.
Okay. That's one of my bucket list to learn an instrument. When I was in high school, I played the flute, but that was only because back then in the 70s, you know, you didn't go out and rent instruments. The instruments were right there at the school, and they only had so many keyboards, and I just lucked out. The keyboards were gone. They said, "Here, take this flute," you know.
Fun, man. Instruments are fun, man. You should do that.
I've always, you know, my daughters took piano, And yeah, actually we had a piano in the house for a while. And, but
wow.
after about a year or two, I got rid of it because they were doing which is a cardinal sin. They weren't practicing. So they'd go take their lessons, but they wouldn't come home and practice. And so one
right.
was more interested in the cheerleading, another one in basketball, you know, and soccer and stuff like that. And so, you know, I said, you know what, I'm spending this money on this piano. I'm getting rid of it because y'all ain't practicing. Y'all ain't getting any better. And that's it. You know, if I had my
right.
back then, I probably should have took some lessons for myself. But now,
right.
If it's a senior part of my life, I might consider doing that if I could find the time to do it, you know, to get that going.
Not too late.
So let's go back and talk about, you know, how you came to be an educator. Why did you choose education as your career?
Well, you know, I think it goes back into my childhood. I learned a lot at an early age. I have a late birthday. I was born in November, but when I was in kindergarten, I kind of started school early. So I learned a lot, and I would always come home, and I had a little cousin, Phaedra, that whatever I learned in school, I would come back and try to show her and try to teach her. So I think just a desire to teach or to help somebody else was always something that I had. And even, you know, in school, I used to peer tutor. Had a cousin that was in some of the special education courses, and I always had a heart for him and just for that population. So I think just my desire to teach has always been there. And then once I got in college, I had a lot of different fields I wanted to go in. At one time, I wanted to do business. Then I wanted to do, you know, broadcast communications. But I ended up doing education, which I was like, you know what, I think is my first love. It's a natural passion, and it goes back to childhood. So I think that's why I chose that route. So
okay.
I did majored in English at FAMU, Florida A&M University.
The great Florida A&M.
Okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard, two of my daughters attended Florida A&M, you know.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome. I did not know that prior to this.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, my oldest daughter, she's 38, and then she's a nurse. She's an RN, got a master's. And then my third oldest, she's 28, and she went to UGA, my alma mater. Then she went to her sister's
wow.
alma mater, which is the FAMU, for pharmacy.
Wow.
And, yeah, she's a big muckety-muck in Houston, making, you know, nice money out there as a what did she tell me she does? She's in pharmacy leadership. She's ahead of a 30 or 40 person pharmacy at the hospital in Houston. So
That's
I'm
amazing.
Very familiar with making that trek down to down to Tallahassee.
So we call it the hill.
The hill.
The highest
okay.
of seven
yeah.
hills. Tallahassee.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
sir.
I am very familiar with that university. So now,
yes,
so we've got an idea about your educational background, but now, where did your musical background come? Where did you get started in being a musical artist? When did that start?
So it's funny, growing up as well, music was always a part of my life. Like my parents would always, first of all, I grew up in the 80s, and so I had parents that had albums, like actual vinyl albums. And they had crates of these albums. They would always keep their album crates in my closet. So, you know, I was a child. I had toys and everything, but I would always find my way to those albums. But
mm-hmm.
as a child, you know, I'm introduced to, like, the Isley Brothers and Earth, Wind, and Fire, you know, some of these old funk and soul artists. And I'm a child, but these are, like, my favorite artists, you know. So I think my love for music started with that. And then, again, just being in the band. And then once I got in high school, I was in the chorus. There's a gospel artist here in Atlanta, Georgia, by the name of Kenton Jones, and we went to the same high school in South Florida. And his mother was our chorus teacher, and so I think under her leadership, that's when I really got out of my shell as far as like performing in front of people, because we'd have to do for a final, we'd have to get into groups and perform for the school and have choreography, and our wardrobe had to be, you know, matching, and it was just like a real performance. Even though it wasn't a performance arts school, she really transformed the chorus into really like a true performance arts, you know, feel. And so that really made me want to do that. And then, of course, once I got into college and got into, you know, the choir and was singing in different groups and bands, and it just was something that I really could see myself doing. I think what happened is by the time I graduated from FAMU, which was in 2003, I had a few opportunities. I had recorded a single, and it was getting airplay, you know, in the local area, and it was really getting popular. But it was almost like a dilemma for me of deciding whether I wanted to pursue the music full time, which can be very unstable. or if I wanted to, you know, go the more sure route, which was, you know, pursuing, you know, what I went to school for, which was, you know, being a teacher and being an educator. And so, of course, I pursued that, but the music never left, and I was always doing music on the side. And at one point, I felt like I couldn't really do both, especially, you know, getting older. And in the industry, they really prefer, you know, younger. Like in the industry, you get to be 25, you're considered an old artist. You know what I mean? I had somebody tell me that one time, and I was 23. It was like, you know, if you're going to do something, you better do it now, because when you're 25, you're considered old. But I just never bought into that. I'm like, you know, what God has for me is for me, and when the time is right, it's going to happen. And for me, it you know, when things really started to progress, I was definitely past 25, but I had a lot of opportunities, you know, up to that point. But I think I've been very fortunate to really be able to do both, to, you know, to do what I love to do, which is work with students, and especially students that are considered, you know, quote unquote, at risk. But also maintain my music and my love for music at the same time. So I've been blessed, man.
Yeah, you mentioned something, and that's a great story. You know, you mentioned about, you know, the musical artists and going back, and your parents, you know, these old music, you know, you mentioned Earth, Wind & Fire, Isley Brothers, and Temptations,
yes,
and Stylistics, and Spinners, and all.
Yep.
That's my folks right there. And,
wow.
When, you know, recently I had two turntables. And I still have, you mentioned crates, and I was like, man, this guy looking in my living room. Because I just moved into a new house about back in September, me and my wife, and
wow.
I had like 10 crates of albums, and and so I got a new TV and everything, and a sound bar. But make a long story short, so I had these two turntables. So the guy comes out to hook them up. He said, hey, can you hook these turntables? He said, those turntables can't hook up into these new stuff, you know. So I had to go buy a new turntable. So, and it's a Bluetooth one to connect and play my albums. And I started playing my albums. Like, I was like, man, I was in heaven. Like, okay. Because I haven't had a chance to really play them in quite a while. And, I had a housewarming, a couple of weeks ago, and folks were saying, you got all those albums and all, and I had, cause one of my favorite artists is James Brown. I just like him because of the
fact that
you know, James Brown really couldn't sing, but he made it happen. He really couldn't sing.
Oh, he did.
I mean,
he really did.
Yeah. But he made it happen. I mean, he was an entertainer, as they say, he was the hardest working man in show business. But, and then I'm reading some biographies on James Brown and Prince. They just came out with a new biography on Prince. And, it, you know, the life, every biography I read about entertainers, they always had these school of hard knocks. I mean, they start out, you know, sleeping on somebody's sofa, you know, that kind of thing, and they just eventually make it. And obviously, you didn't want to go that path, sleeping on somebody's couch, you know, to try to see if you're going to make it in the business, because a lot of people don't, you know. But that's a good thing. So at this point in your career, in what you're doing, and I think music has changed a lot, because now, you know, you don't need a record company to get a record out. You don't need one.
Exactly.
Matter of fact, it might be to your detriment, because they may filter or censor what you do. Now, you could do it. You could put a song, put it together, go in the studio, and boom, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, so how do you see yourself? I know that you've been nominated for ATL's Hottest Award, the Hottest Male Vocalist, and you're the winner of the Eddie?
Eddie Awards,
Eddie Award for Outstanding Neo Soul Male Indie Artist. So you're out there still making it happen. So with
make
your music, let's talk about your music for a second. So where you see you going with that? I mean, because you graduated in 2003, I'm not going to give away your age, but you're beyond 35. I'm just going to put it that way.
I am.
So where do you see you just going to keep doing this and releasing stuff, you know, on your own? I mean, how do you – let's talk about the business side. You go in the studio, you do something, then what do you do with it?
So the funny thing about it is that even before 35, when I was 25 and 26, I was recording, and some stuff I put out, some stuff I didn't. But it's almost like everything that I put out, at least underground, it would always, you know, make waves and get attention. And I would never follow it up, you know. And I remember when I was still in Tallahassee, I had just graduated. But I remember that there was a guy who was in Atlanta, and he got a hold of my song and wanted me to come up, because there was – at the time, there was a big showcase, and there were some labels that was, you know, going to be there. and he really mm-hmm. wanted me to perform for it. And he hadn't even met me, but just heard the song, was like, you got to come up. And I came up. Crazy story is that I came up to Atlanta, but I did not go to the showcase because, again, it was almost like, to be honest with you, I'm going to be honest. I really was afraid of success because I truly feel at that time that had I gone, something probably was going to happen because of that. But there was a part of me that was really still afraid about kind of really getting deep into music, you know what I mean? And so for so mm-hmm. long, I kind of have just been sitting on stuff. Fast forward, I record and I put stuff out, but now it's to the point where I'm an artist, but I'm really more so focused now on the writing aspect because, you know,
okay.
to be honest with you, that's really where you get paid. You know what I mean? Even if I'm not writing for myself, and, you know, there are certain songs that I write and I know that this is something I want to keep for myself, but it's other songs that I write and I'm like, you know, I could sing this or somebody else could sing this. And, you know, being in Atlanta where there's just so many other artists, independent and mainstream, you know, all it takes is just that one song that gets in the right hands of the right person and you got a hit and, you know, based on publishing, you can get paid for years and years off that song. So I think my goal right now is to, there's so many songs I've written, but I haven't recorded. And so now I think moving into 2020, my goal is to just get a lot of that stuff just recorded and to really shop my stuff around. And of course, I'm still planning on pushing myself as, you know, D Swin, the artist. But I think 10 years, you know, in the past, it was like, I have to be this artist that's just out here. I have to get this major deal. That's not my focus. Kind of like what you alluded to. It's different now. You know, as an indie artist, to me, that's the way to go because you just have so much more flexibility over your music, over the direction that you are as an artist. You don't really have this big machine of these people kind of trying to craft you into a certain image. You know what I mean? You can really exercise your individuality and be the artist that you truly are. You just don't have the financial backing on the front end. You know what I mean? And it takes a lot of work to kind of put yourself out there, you know.
And you hit on something is that, you know, producing, you know, writing, a lot of money can be made reading the biographies of Prince and other artists. And people don't know how many songs, let's say, for example, artists like Prince wrote for other people that he didn't sing.
Absolutely.
He didn't produce. He just said he wrote it. Here you go. And then I just read an article where Bob Dylan sold his catalog. Okay. And you might have to help me with this, but the catalog is songs that he's written where you're getting royalties off of. And you can really quantify what that is. So let's say you wrote 10 songs.
Right.
I'm just going to make up a number. He's getting $10,000 a year off of those songs. So he securitized mm-hmm. those and sold them. And then of course the whoever bought them, and he sold it for like, I want to say it was like $300 or $400 million.
Wow.
And so now whoever bought that catalog is going to get the royalties, which is just like it's like, you know, investing in a CD. You're going to get a certain percent.
Absolutely.
Because you can see the history on how those songs have produced over the years.
Absolutely.
And Bob was like 79, so he just did it. David Bowie, you know, was one of the first to do that, to securitize his catalog. And people have heard about Michael Jackson bought the Beatles catalog.
Yeah, with
the
Beatles.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly. So people don't understand the business part, how writing songs can be extremely lucrative in terms of you as an artist trying to, you know,
Absolutely.
Make it in the business from that standpoint.
Absolutely.
So when you say you put something out, what do you mean by that? You go in the studio, you make it, and how, what's your vehicle to push it out? How do you push it out? Social media? You go and start singing at venues, which I see on your bio that one of the venues that I like, that I frequented, I'm surprised I didn't see you there, was the Apache Cafe. I used to frequent that place quite a bit.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Yeah, you know.
Yes, sir. One of my favorites.
And I like small venues like that, you know, up close and personal. So how do you push it out?
Those are my favorite venues to perform at, by the way. Those up close and personal venues are the best ones, in my opinion. But yeah, when I say put a song out, so basically, I go through the process of recording the song. And, you know, for me, when I write a song, I pretty much have in my mind exactly how the song is going to flow. So once I've identified, you know, where I'm going to record it and I go into the studio, I really guide my own sessions. You know, some artists, they go in, the studio engineer is kind of guiding them on, you know, how to sing this part or do this part again. But when I do go in the studio, I'm kind of self-sufficient. So I kind of guide my own process. And it takes me sometimes 30 minutes to an hour to get a whole song done, and it's done, you know. Of course, there are times I may go back maybe a week or two later, and I may hear something different and want to polish up some stuff. Once that process is done, it's a matter of me if I decide I'm going to push that out as a single, then I start brainstorming what's my promotional, you know, package going to be. Is it going to be new photos that I'm going to, you know, push out just as the promo? And then it's a matter of me getting it on social media, me getting it on, you know, Apple Music or, you know, Google Play, just all the online outlets. But for me, my whole thought process when I'm putting out something that I know is going to be a single is just promo. So it's a matter of, you know, how many weeks in advance am I going to announce that this is coming out? You know what I mean? Or like if you are an artist that you already have a certain, you know, number of people that kind of support you and follow you, you may decide that you're not going to do a lot of promo in the very beginning. I'm just going to kind of do a shock effect thing where maybe a week prior, I'm going to put a promo out, and then the next week, I'm going to drop this single. You know, different ways that you do it. But in my mindset, it's almost like I try to just figure out, what did I do the last time? How did I approach that? And I try not to approach different singles the same way. You know what I mean? So, like, the previous one, it might have been 2 months of promo. You know what I mean? So, my next single, I'm not going to do that much promo. You know what I mean? I don't want it to be the same process. Because what I also have learned is that you may have a lot of followers and a lot of supporters and people that follow you, but people can be fickle. You know what I mean? So you're popular this day and the next single, you might not get the same attention, you know, because people get kind of tired of the same thing or the same process. So I try to just always up what I've done the last time. And, you know, even image wise, you know, I never try to deviate away from who I naturally am. But as an artist, I will say I always try to think about just my look, my appearance, just the whole demeanor itself. But I never try to match what I've previously done. Sometimes it's in the same vein, but I just try to conceptualize, you know, what's going to be different about this single than, you know, the previous one, you know? So it's a lot of thought process that kind of goes into that.
So I can imagine that that's how you got into the apparel brand, which we're going to talk about. But first, I want to play one of your songs. And I want you to give us some background. The first song I'm going to play is called Crazy. Can you set this up, what this song is about, you know, and give us some insight into what was going through your head when you wrote it? I'm assuming you wrote this song as well.
Yep, I wrote Crazy. Crazy is actually my most recent single. I dropped that in 2019. And just a brief background on Crazy. I got that track and just basically wrote to the track. Sometimes I write and I already have a concept and then I put it to music. But in this case, I had the track. And hearing the track, I was like, now what will flow well with this? And around the time, I was just thinking about the concept of life. I was actually listening to Maze and Frankie Beverly, Joy and Pain, and just the idea of that song about life itself. So this song, although when you hear the lyrics, it almost sounds like it's about love in the form of a relationship, but it's really about love as a whole and the ups and downs of love. So that can be a romantic relationship, that can be a family relationship, but it's basically just about the fact that something so powerful that can make you so happy can also make you so sad. So it's just the contrast of love being this powerful, warm, inviting thing, and it's something that can also break you down and make you lose your mind and basically make you insane or make you crazy and make you do things that typically you wouldn't do, you know, outside of that situation. And so that's what Crazy is about. But if you listen to the song, it's almost like I'm having a direct conversation with a crowd of people, with the listeners. So it's a creative song, real catchy song.
And so here we go. Crazy by D. Swint.
Mic check 1, 2. Thank you. love, crazy love.
That's banging, man.
Thank you, brother.
That's banging. So you had some background singers in that, is that right?
Actually, I do all my background, all my own background.
Oh, get out of here. All right. So you did.
That was all me.
That was all you. So who wrote the music? Do you write the music as well?
So that was our producer. The music itself was produced by a producer by the name of Tone Jones.
Okay.
Tone Jones. But so I didn't do the music, but all the vocals, all the arrangements, all the lyrics, that was all me. And I wrote that in a day and a half.
A day and a half. And so now, do you have a studio in your home, or you go to an outside studio to produce this stuff?
So I don't have a studio in my home. I would love to do that eventually. I go to an outside studio. I have a few studios I go to, but there's one of my good friends who I knew back when I was in Tallahassee. As a matter of fact, when I was performing there and had a band, he used to play bass for me occasionally. And he has a studio here, and he's a sound engineer and all that good stuff. So I typically link up with him and record, and kind of can go over there anytime I need to lay something down. So we worked on that, and he did all the mixing and arranging and everything as far as the sound itself. And that's what we came up with, man.
That is awesome. So what musical genre is that in? What is that considered? What kind of music is that?
You know, that's a great question. So I would definitely say it's R&B. I think it definitely could be played on your traditional R&B station. So I don't know. I think that track itself is R&B. There's a lot of other stuff that I have that probably will cross over to maybe neo soul or maybe soul. You know, I think some of my music and some of it that I've done in the past is, you know, inspirational gospel. It all is urban. When I was in Florida, I created this genre for myself that was called urban neo gospel soul. And the
urban
purpose of me saying urban neo gospel soul, it was because it combines all of those elements. You know, all my music is urban. Neo, because sometimes it gives you that neo soul vibe. Gospel, just because a lot of it, even though it may not be traditional gospel, a lot of my music is inspirational, spiritual to a certain extent, but it all has elements of soul because I was influenced by so many soul artists. And so I kind of coined that term to wrap up the sound that I think I exhibit in my music.
Okay, you're going to have to forgive me for this question, because although I started out my career in broadcasting and journalism, a disc jockey, okay, working at mostly what they call top 40 stations, okay? And when I came to Atlanta as a DJ, then that was my first urban station. So having said all that, what is Neo Soul? Can you give me an artist about what is Neo Soul? Help me with that.
So
I'm trying to get hip, you know?
No, you are, brother. Trust me. Think about D'Angelo. Think about Music Soul Child. From the female angle, if you think about maybe Jill Scott or Erykah Badu, those are what I would consider neo soul artists. Yep.
Okay. All right.
And
that
neo soul movement kind of came in the 90s, where we kind of got back to like live instrumentation and things like that. You know, we kind of got away from that for a while. So the neo soul movement kind of brought back some of those elements of, you know, live instrumentation and, you know, just real vocals that at one point I think music had lost.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Is neo soul characterized by certain type of instrumentation or vocalization? How is it? You know, I'm familiar with Jill Scott, D'Angelo, and Erykah Badu. And I like those artists.
Yes.
But what makes it neo soul?
So I think what makes a song or just the genre itself neo soul, definitely the instrumentation. I think that live instrumentation is key in neo soul. But I think just when it comes to the performance aspect, you know, sometimes music or sometimes R&B can be very calculated. You know, like if you see an artist and you may hear the song on the radio, and when you go to the show, the artist kind of either sings over the track or they sing the song exactly how it is on the radio. But with neo soul, there's a certain level of flexibility and freedom there. So those artists typically are kind of like what I call on-the-spot artists. You know, they kind of just go with the vibe of what's going on. They're vibing with the band. They're vibing with the audience. And so you never know what you're going to get in a neo soul concert, because the artist typically does not sing the song the same way that it is on the album. You know what I mean? They kind of just vibe, and it's a real in-the-moment type of feel. And so that's what kind of characterizes neo soul versus other genres.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Now I'm hip. Because I saw, I was watching this. I always try to educate myself, you know, about something. I always ask questions because, you know, if you don't know, ask. And I saw D'Angelo. I was watching this documentary on, I want to say, Finding the Funk. It's about, you know, Bootsy Collins, James Brown, going back to this, you know, the funk. Okay. And D'Angelo was on that and had a great part. It's about an hour and a half documentary on. It's on. I think it's on Netflix. Yeah, it's on Netflix. And it's great. You got to check it out. I'm going to get the right title, then I can text it to you. But the thing about it was that he has such an appreciation for the history. I mean, he was talking about Miles Davis and Sly Stone.
Wow.
And was talking about how Miles Davis and Sly Stone hooked up. Now, Sly Stone is one of my favorite artists as well. And his music still, to me, is just unique in the way it sounds and the presentation of it.
Absolutely.
But I didn't know Miles Davis, you know, hooked up with Sly Stone and they produced some stuff. But on the documentary, he talks about this. And so I was really impressed. I like D'Angelo, but I was really impressed with his appreciation and homage to the classical music, you know, of R&B, you know, and just the history of the funk, you know, and that kind of thing.
So you've
got these songs, writing these songs, so you're going to transition into, I guess, maybe producing, but more of the writing. How do you get stuff out there to get folks to, if you write something, how would you get it out there? Do you produce it and say, and send it to artists and say, because if you're writing something, like, let's say Crazy or some of these other songs I'm going to play in a little bit, what artists do you see, you know, performing and recording your music? Do you have a certain artist or group of artists or classification? Is it Neo Soul the group that you would be, you know, those artists would you be sending your material to, or are you going to write across genres?
So that's a very, very good question. So the first thing is, to be honest with you, I'm really still trying to figure that part out, because I know that when I first moved here, I would hear about different writing sessions, and, you know, people would just go to a writing session and they just kind of brainstorm with each other. Where myself, I would love to do that, but kind of coming in the game already having a whole bunch of songs that are just out there, I'm really trying to figure out how to kind of make those connections. I do know that there are certain times where artists will, you know, kind of be looking for different songs, and then they put something out there, like on social media or stuff like that. But I also know that some of the showcases that I've done when I moved here, I've met a lot of people who are affiliated with different artists who just by that affiliation are willing to, you know, give them your flash drive with, you know, songs on it and stuff like that. There's a producer who actually came to Price Middle about 2 years ago. His name is Beethoven, and he came, and he actually allowed me to submit some songs to him, and I had a whole bunch of songs on the flash drive. I knew it was coming the day before, and I'm like, I gotta slide him some music. And I, you know, introduced myself to him and gave it to him, and, you know, of course, I haven't heard anything from that, but I think just, and especially being in Atlanta, it's so saturated with so many artists and producers and writers. I think it's just a matter of being in the right place at the right time, but also just networking and getting yourself out there. That's something that I think I've learned since I've been here, that I kind of have to naturally get myself out there more. Because, you know, Florida, especially, I'm from South Florida. I'm from Fort Lauderdale, but Tallahassee is a smaller city. It's not as it doesn't have as many. It's a lot of talented artists, but it's definitely no Atlanta. So, being there, and it's kind of like, you know, I'm the person that's really one of the driving forces in music coming to Atlanta, where you have thousands of people that are doing the same thing. It's a matter of really just rubbing shoulders with the right people and just making sure that your face is in the place. But that's something I definitely have had to work on, just my networking skills. And, you know, I'm a very quiet nature, humble guy. So sometimes I'm not the first one to be like, hey, you know, I can do this, I can do that. I'll just kind of sit quietly. And sometimes other people will kind of speak up for me, but I've definitely learned that you got to kind of open your mouth and get yourself out there, because you're in a competitive city, you know, and there's a lot of opportunity here. So I've definitely had to just go to different showcases and just, you know, just be in the place and really put myself out there and be more assertive. But I am definitely still trying to figure out just how to really make those connections when it comes to the writing and getting my songs to the right person. As far as the type of artist, I was going to say definitely R&B artists. I still love artists from the 90s, you know, and what I do notice as well is there are a lot of 90s artists who are now indie artists. They you know, used to be on major labels back, you know, in the day, but as you alluded to earlier, the music game has changed. And so you now are seeing like a, you know, a reemergence of different artists who were like at the top of the game in the 90s, and now they're coming back. And, you know, so I love artists like, I don't know if you ever heard of Dave Hollister. You know, I love Dave Hollister, and he was in the Black Street, you know. So, you know, artists like that, I would love to write for Dave. You know, to be honest with you, I would not discriminate any artist who would be interested in the song. I would definitely, you know, be willing to, you know, show them some stuff, but definitely somebody who I feel is a true R&B vocalist that is more into like the live sound of a live instrumentation. You know, a lot of music now isn't very musical, you know, and that's not a diss. It's just the reality. A lot of music now is not as musical as, you know, music in the past. But, you know, the stuff I write still has melody, still has harmonies and, you know, lyrics that I feel are still meaningful. And so any artist that is putting out music like that, that I feel is music of substance, I'd definitely be willing to submit, you know, music to.
When I hear you, yeah, and I hope I get this artist name, but the name of the song that I love is Take Me to the Alley. Is that Billy Porter? You ever heard that?
Billy Porter. I love Billy Porter.
Yeah. That song, Take Me to the Alley? Is that the name of it, I think?
I believe so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. That song, and he did it. I think it's like I saw the video, and the video talking, you know, it's a one take, I guess, they do where they just say, okay, we're going to do it on one take. And I see you in the mind of that kind of artist. You know what I mean? You know,
I love him.
Oh, man, yeah. I just discovered him about a year or so ago through that song.
Yeah.
Because I'm a song guy. If I hear a song, not necessarily, then I like it. But there's certain artists I like, but I'm old school in doing that. So, yeah, but you need a hype man. That's what you need. You need to get one of them students to hype you.
Right. And the funny thing about it is that when the students found out that I sing and perform, that's exactly what they do. Like, that's my teacher, you know, Mrs. Wynn.
There you go. Yeah. The hype man. Have you thought about getting an agent? Have you thought about getting an agent? Have you pursued that avenue?
So actually, there was I was in talks one time with a gentleman that was going to kind of do that for me, and we never really pursued that. But I think moving forward, I definitely would, especially somebody who is connected. The reason I kind of shied away from it, and nothing against that gentleman, just here, there are a lot of people who kind of advertise themselves as like an agent or a manager, but then like when I do my research, they really aren't as connected as I would kind of like them to be. And I think there are just like people in Atlanta are, you know, they come here for, you know, to pursue their talent. You know, a lot of people come here to kind of pursue that as well. But I would definitely want to work with somebody that kind of already has some different connects as opposed to somebody who is trying to kind of establish themselves as an agent. You know what I'm saying? If that makes sense. You know, I need somebody who will be connected that can really, you know, already have some established connections. I'm not opposed to working with somebody. It would just really have to be the right situation, you know.
Got it. You got to be careful because, you, like I said, you're not, you know, sleeping on someone's couch. You know, you've got bank.
Absolutely.
So you got to be really selective. So this next song that I want to play is called Fly. Give us an intro to this song. What's this song about? Fly.
Fly is one of my favorite songs. Fly is a song that I wrote not long after I moved to Atlanta. Real briefly, I was trying to decide if I really wanted to move to Atlanta after being in Florida for so many years. It was the first time I moved out of state, and my transition to Atlanta was over a weekend. So I got my job offer on a Friday, but I had to report on a Tuesday. So it wasn't a lot of time. But just the song is about you kind of stepping out of your comfort zone and sometimes having to fly away from the crowd and having to do stuff on your own in order to move closer towards your destiny. And so the song, this song, in contrast to Crazy that we just played, this song is extremely personal because I wrote it based on my transition to Atlanta from Florida, but just my transition in general, working at the same school for 11 years and then moving out of state to a brand new school, you know, leaving my family I have a lot of family in Georgia, by the way, but my, you know, majority of my family is in Florida. So leaving them and, you know, just going to a different way of life is pretty much what I did. And so Fly just represents a person, you know, spreading their wings and exploring life and finding themselves in the process.
All right, here we go. Fly by D. Swint.
Your
Nice, nice, nice. That has a whole different vibe than that first one. I mean, you know, it's a little more mellow, you know, just a little bit. If we're going to talk about your business interests, and before we go, I want to give you your social media handle so people can check you out. So if there was one artist that you would like to meet, who would you like to meet? If you had the choice to meet one artist, who would that be?
Ooh, that would be very hard. So I would probably say if I could meet one artist, it would probably be Chaka Khan.
Wow.
Chaka Khan.
Why Chaka Khan?
And I was going to say Stevie Wonder. That was originally what I was going to say, just because I love his music so much. And, you know, he's a writer as well. So I feel like I connect to Stevie. But the reason I would say Chaka is because when I think back to, again, that, you know, as a child and looking through those album crates, I saw so many Chaka albums. And so I feel like if there's any artist that I think I just studied or just, you know, just was so in awe by just as a child, just the sound, just, you know, her look, just everything, it was Chaka Khan. So people joke with me, and I was like, you know, they see her on a war show, they'll test me, you know, your girl is on TV, you know, we know you love Chaka. So she's just my favorite artist because I had a crush when I was a child. And it has sustained throughout all these years. But now she's just an amazing artist, an amazing voice. And I think what I love about her is the fact that you hear her voice, you immediately know it's Chaka Khan. Like, her voice is easily, instantly recognizable. And I've always wanted to have that same, you know, that same aspect to my voice that when somebody hears me, they know it's me.
And you know, that's interesting that you mentioned it, because one of the, you know, with Chaka Khan, of course, it was with Rufus. And one of the albums I pulled out when I was digging in the crates to play, you know, when I got this new turntable was Chaka Khan, you know. And I think just like you, I had a crush on everybody liked Chaka Khan. Her and what's her name? It just escaped me. Donna Summer. That was the other
Donna
one.
Summer. Yep, we had her album too.
Yeah, I have her album. I think she's a tremendous. She's a good, great singer, you know. And you know, although she made her name in the disco genre, but she's a good singer, you know.
She
could really, really sing, and that's what made her song so well. But of course, you know, she came to fame with her, well, you know, "Love to Love You, Baby," and the songs that came, you know, came after that, you know. Now, I've heard when I was, you know, starting out in radio, when I started my radio show, my producer was actually a voice coach. And, she was a voice coach. And so she helped me, because when I was in at UGA and I was in journalism and broadcast journalism as well, I had this teacher, my voice teacher, so a professor told me I'd never make it in radio, which I proved her wrong.
Wow. You sure did.
You know, that's that whole negative, you know, oh, you'll never make it, you know. But one of the things my voice coach told me, and I wonder what your thoughts on this, is he said that everybody can sing. They just have to find their voice. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I completely agree. I completely agree. And I think what's so ironic is that even my singing voice, and you can probably tell, is very different than my speaking voice. People hear me speak. Right. And then when they hear that I'm going to sing, they imagine like this low barrel white type of voice. And then my singing, I can touch those notes, but my natural singing range is just much higher than my speaking tone. But for years, I was self-conscious about that. You know what I mean? And it was like, you know, I don't sound the way people think I'm going to sound. But I had to do that for myself, just kind of find my voice and just me, find myself in my voice and kind of just be comfortable with that. You know what I mean? And so I definitely agree. And I think that's another thing too, when you have different artists, especially emerging artists and people that are trying to kind of come on the scene, sometimes as a new artist you get caught up in trying to be the next somebody else as opposed to being the first yourself. You know what I mean? And sometimes even you know, radio people or just the public in general instantly want to compare a new artist to somebody who's already out there. But I think as an artist, the key thing to do is just do just what you said, like find your voice and just work that and just, you know, craft yourself based on who you are as a vocalist or as a, you know, a speaker or whatever, you know, what have you.
That's awesome. Important. Awesome. So let's talk about your business interests now. You have two, Swint Styles Urban Apparel and DS Tutoring. Yes. So let's start with the apparel. When did you get it started? Why did you do it? And, you know, how's it going? Those are about four questions in there.
I had the vision for years. No problem. I had the vision to do it years and years ago. My mom went to FAMU as well. It was a fashion merchandising major. But later on, she got into the healthcare field. But she's always kind of been into fashion and sewing and making her own clothes and stuff. And I know I pitched to her a while back. I was like, Mom, let's go into business together. You know, you make ties and make some stuff, and I'm gonna push it. You know what I mean? When I do my shows, I wear your stuff. We can go into business. And, you know, she thought it was a cool idea, but we just never did it. And then I just throughout the years had the idea for an apparel brand, but I changed the concept many times. But when COVID hit, and it just really gave me time to process and imagine, you know, how different life could potentially be. You know, we didn't know how anything was going to be, even when it comes to the job market. I didn't know how stable my position was. And I was like, you know what, this is the time some of those things that I've been wanting to do and saying I'm going to do, but just never did it. This is my motivation to just go ahead and do it. But the premise behind the Swinton Styles Urban Apparel is that all of my apparel, and I'm starting with, you know, shirt lines and hoodie lines, but every apparel piece has a positive inspirational message. And that kind of just goes to who I am as a person. You know, I'm always, even on social media, every now and then you'll see me put either an original quote or just something motivational, you know, that people can, you know, I think relate to. But I had the idea to think about common songs or common quotes that people have heard that can we can flip them and it can really be inspiration to kind of get us through this pandemic. And so that's what caused me to go ahead and take this time. I launched it back in, I think, August. And it's been doing very well since that time. And I started with the line, the Keep On Moving, Don't Stop apparel line.
Okay.
And then my second line that I have out is called Strength, Courage, and Wisdom. And so I just think that just starting with those lines, I think, can just encourage somebody, especially to keep on moving. So many different things have, you know, come up in 2020. It's just been a crazy year. But I just believe if you're still alive and still have breath, we just got to motivate ourselves on a daily basis just to keep moving, you know, keep pursuing whatever it is that you want to pursue. So that was the motivation behind Swinton Styles.
And that's awesome, you know, because, you know, I've been telling people that if you come out of this pandemic and you don't have, you know, a new idea or a new job or something or a sideline hustle, it's not that you lack time. You lack discipline. You know what
absolutely,
I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Because everybody got a lot of time right now because you can't go out to the movies, you can't go to the theater. You got time.
Yep.
And instead of hitting Netflix for 6-7 hours a day, maybe you might want to think about, hey, what can I do for my home? And, you know, I stopped my radio show about 20 years ago. And so when the pandemic hit back in March, I'm like, you know, I really enjoyed doing radio. I really want to do it. And I started talking to people, say, hey, just do it. And so that's what I did.
Yep.
There's a lot more to it. But the point is that, you know, if you have been thinking about something and you said you just didn't have enough time, if you're sequestered at home because you can't go into work, it's not that you lack, you know, more time. You just lack discipline. You see, because now
it's
you have the time. It's a discipline.
Absolutely.
And that's something else. Yeah. So, you know, kudos for you for coming up with something and say, hey, you know, I'm going to put
you.
And people are saving money because you can't go out to eat as much. You can't go out to the theater because I like to go to plays, live plays and stuff like that. I like to go to the movies.
Yeah.
I like to go see bands, you know. And I'm sure if this was non-COVID time, if you were performing, I'd come see you. You know, just getting out. You know, me and my wife like to do that.
Right.
And you can't do it. So you got to come up with some things. Yeah, you got to come up with some things that you can do. So now, then you started the tutoring. The DS tutoring.
Yep.
Is that still
DS
a COVID? Is that a COVID business as well? A COVID focused
so
business.
DS tutoring. I kind of relaunched this during COVID, but this is something that I was doing back in Florida. The difference was, of course, then it was a face to face, and because of COVID, the DS tutoring, you know, took on a virtual platform, which I was nervous about because it's like everybody's kind of being forced to do virtual schooling anyways. I wasn't sure how people would feel about, you know, tutoring session as virtual is like kids are tied up in on the computer, but I got such a wide response, and I think it was because a lot of people that knew me and that were helping me promote it kind of knew me as an educator. You know, I'm in education leadership now, but just as an educator, I've always tried to be innovative and interactive and try to just make sure that my delivery when it comes to, you know, academics is something that can catch, you know, students' attention. And so it's been a great experience, and I knew that parents were having some anxiety about just where they were and you know, being able to support their own kids, you know, in the role of like a home teacher. And so I really did it, and I felt it was the perfect time to launch that again to support those parents and also to really reinforce to the students the platform when it comes to virtual learning. And so the students that I do serve, I feel that when they log on with their actual real school, they're more comfortable, they're more content. They're used to what we do, and so by it translates to when they get into their class. They're you know, we go through the same similar lessons and similar platforms, but they're much more equipped to handle it because of what we do in the tutoring space. So it's been very rewarding. You know what I mean? And that one, of course, I look at it as it's another business for me, but it's the intent behind it to really help other people. You know what I mean? And that's what really, to me, that's a more rewarding you know, position to be in, to know I'm helping somebody through this rough time.
Is there a particular grades that you're focusing on?
So I focus on 6th grade through 12th. However, I have gotten a lot of inquiries for elementary. And the only reason I really didn't want to focus on elementary is because I was really unsure how effective I could be in elementary. I did accept a 4th grader, and she's a darling. So I'm thinking about expanding that. But I really want to kind of get more resources, and hopefully after next year, well, hopefully over the summer, I can kind of get more resources for elementary so that I can expand my services, because I think I probably have more people inquire about elementary than secondary.
Wow. That's interesting. Why do you think
more
inquiring about elementary versus secondary?
Well, you know what? I personally think it's because I think people are really nervous about just elementary age kids being able to function on the computer. You know, just older kids in general are, you know, I think kids in general are used to technology, but I think when it comes to actually, you know, being disciplined and having systems in place, that's hard when you think about a third or fourth grader, you know, transitioning from being in a very hands-on, interactive, touchy-feely classroom to sitting in front of a computer where you don't have that direct access. And I think a lot of parents had anxiety thinking about not just the virtual platform, but my young child in this platform, how are they going to, you know, function? And so I think that's why it's been so many elementary age, you know, parents of elementary age kids who have reached out. So I definitely plan to expand in the near future.
So what's your take on with this COVID? We don't know, you know, I know around the country, various school districts have different models, hybrid, in-person versus virtual. You know, what's your thoughts on that, since we're talking about, you know, academics, what's your thoughts on that, how, you know, children, particularly minority children, African-American children, how are they going to recover from, you know, what's going on academically for them? Are they going to be able to recover from, you know, particularly going back to the second quarter of last year, of this year, back in the spring when all this happened, and then, of course, the fall? Do you think African-American kids are going to be able to recover from that? You know, because I'm just looking at, you know, just the gap getting wider. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely concerned about the same thing, just the gap getting wider. And just, you know, I think in general, a lot of times I feel like our kids just get the short end of the stick all the time, you know. But I'm more so concerned about just the physical aspect of it. You know, I'm concerned about, you know, some of our kids who don't have sufficient resources, or might have been, you know, it's been such a delay on them getting their resources. So that puts them even further behind. And it is a tremendous concern. But I can't help but imagine, how is it going to be, or how would it be, you know, getting back in the building and potentially, you know, unsafe environments or numbers continuing to rise. And it's almost like we're forcing our way back into school. I'm really more so concerned about the physical aspect of it, because I guess I'm so used to my career of working with kids who have been counted out by others and kids who have been considered at risk. And I've, you know, worked hand in hand to, you know, see kids make tremendous strides. And so I think for me, I know that that's possible. I think it just really takes effort to get us where we know we need to be. But I don't want to sacrifice anybody's health when it comes to that. And so I really wish there was a way that, you know, school districts can, and I'm just going to be transparent, would just consider not being so quick to rush back, but really looking at more ways to kind of support us in the space that we are in. And because even when you think about it, going back to a hybrid model and just the transition from that, I think that there are a lot of schools and a lot of districts who, now we're in December and we've been home since at least March or April, And I think that even though it's not the most ideal situation to be in, I think a lot of schools and a lot of districts have made strides and kind of created a sense of consistency to a certain level. But I think when it comes to looking at, you know, 2021 going back, it's another level of transition. And I think sometimes you have to, you know, build some type of consistency for you to see change. And I think we just so many different changes, and we're going to go back this month, or now we're changing it, we're going to wait 2 months now and revisit it again. It's just too much uncertainty. I would not even be opposed, and I know that a lot of people wouldn't agree with this, but even if it was a situation where we said, look, let's wait until, you know, let's just ride it out, you know what I mean? And just hopefully by the end of this school year as a whole, the COVID situation can just be, you know, much better contained, and we just be in a better situation. But I just don't know if everybody who's looking at it is looking at it from the lens of just physical safety and physical health. You know, so that's always going to be my major concern.
And you bring up a big point, and I'm going to be done with this so we can get into this last song. But here's the thing, when I hear people saying, let's go back to in person, and we know someone's going to get COVID. That's just undeniable, you know, across the district that we both work in. And so now the question is, which one of your children or parents or whomever, adults, do you want to sacrifice for going in?
Absolutely.
That's the question. So if someone dies, if a child dies because they get COVID, if a parent or teacher or administrator or staff gets COVID and dies, are you willing to sacrifice that person if it's your child or your friend or your spouse or your loved one? See,
Absolutely. That's
where it gets, you know, everybody talks
about
theoretical. That's when it becomes real. And I know of two or three people that in my family that have died because of COVID, or friends. And, you know, would I be willing to sacrifice them? No. So that's where the rub meets the road.
I think that's such a valid point, too. I think it's a valid point. I had a cousin who in May passed away, and then I have one now who's currently battling COVID and pneumonia at the same time. So I think that when you really look at it from that lens, and you have so many people that have these stories of family members and friends and loved ones who've gone through this, it just you see it from a different, you know, a different lens, you know?
Right. Right.
So
and the
I wish
suffering,
that we would be more sensitive to that.
The suffering that goes on, and, you know, and you can't say goodbye to the loved one because you can't go in the hospital, all these things. So, all right. So that's, I digress. But okay, last song. Well, before we do that, can you share your social media handle so people could find your tutoring and your apparel business and, of course, your music?
Absolutely. So as far as my music, you can follow me on Instagram at DSwint Music. That's DSwintMusic. And that is Instagram. That's Facebook. That's YouTube. I have music videos on there. As far as my apparel, you can actually go to my website directly, and that is SwintStyles.com. And that is SwintStyles. SwintStyles.com, and I have my entire merchandise on there. And then as far as my tutoring, you can find me on Instagram at DSTutoring, all together.
Got it. So this last song is called Satisfied. Give us an intro to what that song is about. What was your impetus for writing it?
Satisfied is a song I wrote back in college. And it was a song just about appreciating where you are in life, identifying that everything may not be perfect, but just having a gratitude for where you are and identifying and acknowledging the fact that it could be worse, and there is still somebody out there who's having it worse than you. So looking at your current state of being and just say, you know what, I know that it could be better, but I'm satisfied with where I am right now, and I'll take it. And that was my mindset with this song. And this song is definitely a fan favorite for people that follow me. I can't do a show without doing Satisfied.
All right, here we go. Satisfied by D. Swint.
Call the hard times that I
Well, that's another banging song by D. Swint.
Thank you, brother.
And I have to tell you, man, that yeah, I would never. If I heard that song on the radio or someone's playing it, I would not say, "Oh, that's my brother D. Swint, man." Dorian, Mr. Swint. I mean, I would. Yeah, but that's good. That's all good, you know. And so it sounds good. I'm just so encouraged, you know, by brothers and sisters like you, but brothers like you that are doing out there, you know, spending their time trying to make things happen, let alone what you do in the educational field. Just for full disclosure, D. Swint, Mr. Swinton, we both work together at Price Middle School, but that doesn't, detract the Price Middle School. We don't, take away from the fact that he's a talent on the rise and he's got some big things ahead of him. Still a young man, got great things, trying to make it happen in this world, you know, and we just need
Thank
more brothers that are doing positive things, you know, out there. And,
Absolutely.
So any parting words before we go?
I just appreciate the opportunity. And I would like to say for anybody out there that has a dream or has something that you want to pursue, just don't let anything stop you. Don't let anything deter you. You know what I mean? Just come up with a goal, come up with a plan and with some action steps and just put it to action. Keep on moving and don't stop.
Great, great. Thank you so much, sir. D. Swint is
Thank you,
on
sir.
Deck.
Hey, I appreciate you.
All right. Enjoy the rest of the evening, sir. All righty. Take care.
All right.
Now.
You too, sir.
Right.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, it's always good, man. I'm always encouraged. That's one thing I like doing this show. I always, you know, whether it's real estate or business or, you know, what have you, investing, you know, I just enjoy uplifting people that are doing great things because there's so much negativity out there in the world that we have to highlight those folks that are trying to do the right thing, trying to make it happen, trying to be successful. And that's a path, you know, that not everybody can take. And I encourage you to, you know, to, you know, frequent, you know, Mr. Swinton, Dorian D. Swint's handles. I'm going to put them on the Facebook and on when this is it's posted now. But one of the things that in light of the fact that, you know, we talked about side hustles is that my wife and I have two side hustles. This podcast is probably the third. But the this broadcast, this podcast is made possible because we're trying to get the word out there, trying to empower people. And there's two areas that we like to empower people in. I like to say, how are you going to get out of this life alive? And you say, Dr. Ross, what are you talking about? I said, what I'm talking about is that at some point, no matter what age you are, if you're not retired, you're going to have to eventually stop working. It could be voluntarily, it could be involuntarily, or it could be because of health reasons or because, you know, you're just tired of working. But how are you going to get out of this life alive? And so my wife and I have come up with two strategies that we're using to make sure we get out of this life alive. And this plan evolves around two areas, real estate and financial services. I'll deal first with the financial services part. In the financial services part, we're helping people put together budgets. We're helping people put together wills. We're helping people improve their credit. We're helping people make sure they're successful financially. That's a commitment. I've been doing that pretty much all my life, you know, ever since the time I was in banking in the early 80s. I went into banking in 80, 81, and then the radio show afterwards. So I've been doing that for, 40 years? What's that? 25, yeah, almost 40 years, you know, so I've been doing it for a long time. And it's just a continuation of that. And if you're interested in what we do, then all I need you to do is text to me at 404-272-4633. That's 404-272-4633. And just text credit. That's real simple. That's not all we do, but that's the focus around what a lot of the stuff we do, because everybody needs to have at least a 700 credit score. If you don't have one, then we can help you with that, in addition to all the other things that we can offer. The second area that we're helping people is in real estate, is buying what we call 50 sub 40 properties. These are properties that are valued at under 50,000. A lot of them are 30,000. And so, we're helping people learn how to do that. You say, well, how do you do that? Well, that's why you need to text real estate to 404 972-472-4633. And then we'll share with you our model and what we're doing to help people do that. Because, you know, it's important that you find out how to do these things. If you look at any of the millionaires or billionaires in America, across the country, across the world, they always have at least two things in there, at least one thing, but most of them have two things in their portfolio. They have real estate and a business. Real estate and a business. And with those two things, that's how they build their empire. And so taking a page, you don't have to reinvent the wheel, just follow their model. But then you just got to find a model that works for you. In real estate, there's so many ways to skin that cat. There's so many ways to make money in real estate. You just have to decide what's going to fit you. And for my wife, Felicia, and I, that's the model that we've taken. And then the financial services go hand in hand, because you've got to be able to be in a position to take advantage of the opportunities that come. All right. So that ends my epistle for today. I once again appreciate Dee Swint, Dorian Swint, coming on and sharing. If you don't have a side hustle, then you need to get you one. Okay. If you don't have one, you definitely need to get you one. Thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to Your Personal Finance with Dr. Charles Ross.